Congress shall make no law, no law which will in any way, no way at all, modify or abridge freedom of speech. No law. Congress or its agencies shall create no rule, no regulation, or legislation which in any way, destroys or mitigates free speech. It cannot legally happen. In short, my fellow Americans, you and I can say anything we want, anytime, anywhere, and Congress, the President, the courts of the United States cannot prevent us from doing that. Not in any way, and never. Is that not clear, compelling, authoritative, and in absolute and unconditional fashion the law of the land? You can say anything you want about anybody or anything at any time, so says the Constitution. However, speech does indeed have consequences. You can say anything you want, but if you lie, or you mislead, or the words you use and the thoughts behind them do harm to another, then you may be liable for those words. But that is a civil matter, a matter of justice between private parties, citizens at work redressing wrongs. But again, it is not a matter for Congress or the federal government, or any government for that matter, to prohibit or abridge free speech. You can say anything you want at any time to anybody, so says the Constitution. But the Washington elite, the power politicals, they do not agree. They are at work, it seems, almost always to temper free speech, to abridge it, if in fact it is speech they don't like. There is at work in Washington, D.C., and consequently our country, that thing called hate speech. That four-letter word hate is the new buzzword. It's the new mantra, the new tool of abridgment. And it is at work to silence much of free speech, to abridge free speech in the name of hate. Hate. But what exactly is hate? If one disagrees with someone or something, criticism automatically follows. And criticism can be healthy. It produces dialogue, and it should, done right, generate discussion, especially of issues. Is that hate? If I do not agree with gay marriage and I say so, can I be deemed by my speech to hate gays? Such criticism, which may begin as rational and reasonable, can, however, often turn to argumentation. Such arguments can turn heated, but are they hateful? If one passionately defends a position, really passionately, can such emotionality be deemed hateful? And if so, by whom? And by what criteria? And if it is deemed hateful, what are the consequences thereof? If one engages in free speech with emotion and passion, does that rise to the level of hate speech? If my passion and deep emotion is aggressively directed against abortion, can one be deemed to be hateful against women? So then, the debate and dialogue, turned into argumentation, increased to the next level with passion and emotion, can turn personal if the issue turns into you or all like you. If discussion turned into argumentation degenerates into passionate personal attack, is that hateful? Should one be punished by law for such verbal conduct? Even in these extreme cases, is there not protected free speech, loud and cantankerous, but free nonetheless? Constitution says it is. If one is passionately against abortion and abortion providers and perhaps even women who have abortions and says so, is that not fully free speech, fully protected by the Constitution and its all-encompassing First Amendment? What do you think? If a person of faith, whether Christian, Jew, or Muslim, tells others that the Bible and the Quran condemn and regard as sinful homosexuality, and that person of faith says so, stands on the firm authority of the book, can such condemnation of homosexuality be deemed to be hate speech? Is the person saying the words hateful for such strongly held personal beliefs? Or is the Bible or Quran the so-called hateful book for authoritatively and uncompromisingly stating such standards for morality and living? Are they hateful books? If this free-for-all society of ours categorizes anti-abortion speech as hate speech, then the next logical step follows, namely, that the Bible should be a banned book, for the Bible is the source of this so-called hate speech. That is, the Bible commands in no uncertain terms, "Thou shalt not kill." That command makes no distinction regarding age. The commandment is unconditional and uncompromising. Thou shalt not kill, no matter the circumstances. That means clearly, it seems, that at the moment of conception and as life begins, thou shalt not kill the child in the womb. To do so is murder, so says the Bible, and therefore an abortionist is a murderer. Not a doctor doing the wishes of a woman, but a purposeful and intentional taker of life. So, if a person exercising free speech passionately criticizes abortion, calls it murder as the Bible says it is, and the abortionist who committed the act of abortion a murderer, and the woman who authorized and participated in the abortion an accomplice and conspirator to murder, is that hate speech? Can that person in the exercise of free speech be punished for that speech? And can the Bible, which in fact prompted that speech, be banned as a resource of hate? Can it? Some think it should, and many think that day is coming. In fact, in some ways, that day is here. There is rampant persecution of the Christian church the world over, and even in our own country. Anti-Semitism is on the rise everywhere. Muslims, the so-called peaceful kind, are kept to the side and out of society's mainstream as much as possible. So many signs and symbols of Christianity are banned from the public square, even at Christmas. Jews are subjects of hate and resentment, even violence, especially on certain university campuses. Peaceful Muslims can be slaughtered by warring enemies. Is all of that not hate at work in word and deed? The world and the media say little about such things, for it, the secular, power-hungry world, wants hate to be its weapon of choice and the sole source and authority of defining precisely what hate means. Hate speech at work is a one-way street. In fact, those who champion abortion, euthanasia, embryonic stem cell research, the homosexual agenda, among many others, are perhaps the real true haters. In reality, these secularists passionately hate Christianity and Judaism, and in fact much of morality and especially the Bible. They are the ones who wish to reset the rules. They are the ones who want to redefine hate and hate speech and to punish you and me, especially if we are Christians, for standing up for what we believe. In short, we are to be silenced and accept, no matter the compromise to our faith and, in fact, our constitutional right of free speech, we are to accept the fact that they determine that what we believe and say is hate speech. So then comes the new commandment from the new speech police: thou shalt not criticize or condemn abortion. Read then again the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law. No law. No law which abridges free speech. I look in vain for the word hate. The First Amendment does not say that we are entitled to unabridged free speech unless it is hateful. When you are told you should not say what you think or believe, or when you are criticized or even punished for what you say, you should defend your right to say it all the more. Christians wonder in this day and age the position to take in the face of this rabid secularism. There are those who merely wish to withdraw and turn the other cheek. Is that you? And they will not confront, even if they are compromised. You know, that's sad. They wish to make friends with mankind and get along and go along, and whatever beliefs there may be are held silently. Silently. I suppose they're well-intentioned Christians and perhaps of good heart, but the secular purveyors of hate speech have silenced them and intimidated them. They have refused to take a stand. Then there are those proud and strong in their faith and convictions who say to the world, I am not ashamed of what I believe. I am not ashamed of the gospel, the Bible and its precepts, the code of ethics and morality it espouses. And I will stand against the forces of secularism and all things anti-Christian. I will stand up and say my piece. I will, these passionate disciples say, be willing to lay my all on the altar for what I believe. And there are Christians the world over who are laying their all on the altar, including their very own lives, because they refuse to accept the march of militant and hateful secularism. Such choosing is coming to America. You can be sure of that. We will be called upon, as people of faith, to stand up for our faith or give it up. Stand up or give it up. I wonder what you will choose. We will be called upon to choose between championing and defending our beliefs and our moral codes, or becoming compromised and silent, perhaps once and for all. For these purveyors of radical secularism hate Christianity. They hate Christian witness, and consequently Christians. They get away with such hatred because they are the power elite, and they control the media and academia and Hollywood. They control the Congress in so many ways, and certainly this president of the United States, and they even hold sway in so many ways over the courts. They are masters at creating and conveying a sense of hopelessness in the face of their hatred. Agree or be silent, or you will be punished one way or another. When it comes to religious beliefs and the verbal witness and testimony thereof, First Amendment rights no longer apply. So say these militant, hateful secularists. So you and I, people of faith, simply have one alternative, in my view. We fight the fight of faith. And we fight it hard. And now, are you willing to do that? To do nothing in the face of evil, and as it tramples the morality of old, is to be a conspirator. It is to deny the relevancy, the truth of faith, a denial like Peter of old, who at the ultimate testing moment denied the Christ he supposedly loved, not once, not twice, but three times. The ultimate lie and compromise. Many think there is nothing worse than denial. It sounds worse when it is verbalized, but it may be even worse when it is internalized, made silent because of a lack of courage or conviction, festering, cancerous within. It is a betrayal not to speak and defend, a betrayal of the Bible for Christians and Jews, and if the betrayal is severe, it may end in tragedy, whether physical or psychological, like the betrayal of Judas of old. So then, my fellow Americans, if you are truly Christian, if you are truly Jewish, then you have no choice but to stand tall for what you believe, no matter the consequences, no matter. We must speak out and verbally defend. We must act and we must do. We must protect and we must defend. We, the people, must champion our rights under the First Amendment, or we will lose them. We must be courageous rather than cowardly. We must know what we believe and in whom we believe, and we must champion that by word and deed. We cannot be made to be ashamed. We cannot be intimidated. And we, as people of faith, must stake our claim in the public square and our moral beliefs as we think are important for America. We must do that. We must stand up to the lie, for the lie is the extreme example of hate. The lie is hate speech at its worst. It comes every day from Washington, from our president, who has lied to the American people, our Congress, which lives in and creates a world of verbal doublespeak and deceit, and even from our court system, which is riddled with bias and prejudice at all levels. That is the real hate at work, in my opinion, the real hate speeches with which all men and women of goodwill should be so deeply concerned. We as citizens watch as our rights, particularly our constitutional First Amendment rights, are whittled away, eroded, and we do so little and often nothing. We seem to fear criticism, and we seem to fear rejection, and so we say nothing. We are intimidated even though we can and should be imbued with the power of the living Lord. We are called upon to be salt and light, but we have lost our flavor and our flame. It is the anger, the threat, the intimidation of the real haters, the rabid secularists, which cause us to compromise and withdraw. We are people of faith, but it seems as though we have all too soon forgotten the commandment that we should fight the fight of faith. Fight the fight of faith. We are people of faith, but we have forgotten that faith without works is dead, and sooner or later so many of the rights bestowed upon us by our beloved Constitution will be dead right along with our dead faith. So I believe that it is our duty to work, which means protect and defend, for the night is coming when no man can work. Therefore, do something. Please, my fellow American citizens, do something to protect your rights under the Constitution. Even where two or three are gathered together, He is there, action occurs, synergy happens, and vision turns into mission. Study the issues. Know your Constitution. Join organizations with other seekers and defenders like you. If you will truly invest time and life in what you believe, I mean truly invest time, you will find the way to be productive and to do what you should do for God and for country. You and I better do it now. The secularists who are truly the haters and purveyors of hate speech, they are on the march. Stand up courageously and protect and defend. Do it. I firmly believe it is now or never. What do you think?